Space Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, Picard Season 3, the Oscar-nominated short films Skinamarink, and The Song of the South. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Avenue 5 on HBO. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I saw, it was an interesting note because I saw people complaining about it on social media. And I know that's like the existence of social media is just there for people to complain. But there was an announcement by one of these sites that tracks what comes and goes off of Netflix. And they pointed out that Arrested Development is going to be dropping off of Netflix sometime in March. Now, already the first three seasons are on Hulu. But that caused people to be like, wait, why is this dropping? It's a Netflix original. In fact, if you recall back in 2012 or something like that, the announcement of Arrested Development being revived at Netflix, it was one of the first big high profile Netflix productions where they rebooted it and they had the whole five seasons on there. If you count it from the beginning again, because they did the last one sometime during the pandemic or released it during the pandemic. And a lot of people are saying, wait, why are you dropping original content? I mean, isn't that the whole point of Netflix is to do this? Well, yes and no. And let me explain that, because there's a lot of people out there like, oh, Netflix is just getting rid of stuff. This is like Batgirl all over again, where Warner Brothers is just axing things for a tax write-off. It's a little more complicated than that. Generally, Netflix productions, when it says Netflix presents at the beginning, that doesn't necessarily mean they own everything. Now, there are certain things like Stranger Things that they own it end to end. It is 100% a Netflix show, and it is unlikely for them to take that off of Netflix at any time. But there's some things they just acquire, especially a lot of the foreign content, in particular, like British stuff that I pay attention to. I mean, I don't fluently speak Spanish and I don't speak Asian languages or Indian languages. So there's a whole swath of international and non-English language programming that I'm unaware of. But in particular, the British stuff I know because I watch some of that. Like they just had that show Kunk on Earth, and that's considered a Netflix originals, but they're not. They're produced by Channel 4 or the BBC or something, and then Netflix just licensed them, and they slapped their name on it. That's how it's done. That's how film production and television production works. But when it comes to domestic stuff, there's some that do that. And Arrested Development, Netflix is not in 100% control of. They essentially got a license for it. Well, the thing is, the license eventually runs out. And the licenses run out for putting the first three seasons online. And they're going back to Hulu because Disney, as the parent company of that, is probably trying to consolidate its own content and making it exclusive to its. That same thing happened with the Marvel shows like Daredevil and Jessica Jones and The Punisher and Luke Cage and all those Netflix series that were Marvel properties. They've now moved to Disney, and that's basically Disney saying, hey, we're not going to renew this license. So that's happening with a lot of shows. And some of them you don't realize aren't Netflix wholly owned. Like, for example, Sandman is not wholly owned by Netflix. It's a DC property. So a lot of the contracts will end up expiring in the next couple of years, you know, especially as we get closer and closer to 2030, you're going to get a lot of these shows expiring. And who knows what happens with the streaming wars? The people who actually own the rights to it may just decide not to renew their contract. So this is not Netflix out there just axing things and getting rid of stuff arbitrarily. These are contracts expiring. This is not some cabal where they're saying, oh, we're going to not have this show on because the heck to our viewers. They're doing what they can. But at a certain point, if you're not offered the license, you're not offered the license. And sometimes when people have had an issue with what Netflix has gotten rid of, they've gone back and ended up getting the series back on there. Like, I think Seinfeld at one point was going to drop off, but Netflix paid a whole ton of money to keep Seinfeld on there because a lot of people rewatch that show. So that's just a little bit of inside baseball of how that right stuff works. Now, really quick, I want to talk about the box office. Knock at the Cabin, actually, last week, because I didn't talk about it last week, it beat Avatar. It was the first time a movie had knocked Avatar off the number one spot. And then Magic Mike this last week got the top spot. And they only made $8.3 million, which is small for a Magic Mike movie. Well, the first Magic Mike did extremely well, and the second one did fine. It was a dip, but both those first two movies cost, you know, $10, $15 million to make. This one was like 40-some million, and it only made $8 million. It made like half of what the second Magic Mike movie. This is kind of a flop when it comes to theatrical. And for all the people that are like, oh, good for them going into theatrical, they didn't just throw it on HBO Max. Maybe they should have. Or maybe they shouldn't have spent $45 million on a stupid Magic Mike movie. Anyways, James Cameron is winning again because he got spots number 2 and 3 with Avatar, and then the re-release of Titanic. People are still going to see that one. And then there was a sort of this photo finish after 84 Brady was at number 4. Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, was going up against Knock at the Cabin. It was a kind of a horse race between 5th place and 6th place. Puss in Boots ended up winning. So Knock at the Cabin, even though it won last weekend, it dropped quite a bit, over 60% from week to week. It doesn't have a ton of staying power, but you know what? It's already made its money back because it was pretty cheap to produce. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I'm going to pick a couple of the movies that had their trailers show on the Super Bowl last week, and let's talk about the trailer for Fast X that comes to theaters on May 19th.
Dominic Toretto. You're about to learn all about fear. You built such a beautiful life, filled with love and family. I never got that chance. You stole that from me. My future. My family. And now, I'm gonna break yours.
You know, it's a Fast and Furious movie. These movies have gotten so stupid and ridiculous. I mean, they're still fun. My biggest problem with the Fast and Furious movies is they run too long. They put too much story in there, and the story's kind of dumb. It's very low-level story. I'm fine with the action. That's spectacle. That's what makes the movies work. But I heard a rumor that this thing's going to be like 3 hours long. I don't know about that. I mean, you really have to have a good reason to have a movie be 3 hours long. And none of these Fast and Furious movies are good enough stories to sustain that. Their action's great, but then they try and put too much story. That's what I'm worried about. Because the characters, there's so many characters in here, and there's good guys and bad guys, and they turn back and forth. Just give me the fast cars and the explosions, and I'm fine. But can I get out of the theater in a cool hour 45? That would be nice. The next one I want to touch on is The Flash, which is coming out June 16th.
Time has a pattern that it can't help reliving. Different people, different worlds, drawn to each other like magnets.
If you were to go into the past, you have no idea what the consequences can be.
Bruce, I could fix things.
You could also destroy everything.
This is highly anticipated. A lot of people are looking forward to The Flash. There's, of course, all the problems that Ezra Miller has had because of their issues with the law. And they're kind of nuts anyways. And I think they need to get some serious help. But with that said, I'm not a big fan of tearing down a single movie for a single performer simply because that person has done something problematic. And I understand there are hundreds of people who have worked on this movie, and I want to see them get their vision realized. It looks good. The only thing is my issue with it is they're like, hey, remember how cool Spider-Man was when we had all the old characters in it? We're going to do the same thing. In fact, we're going to put Michael Keaton in there. I just want him to show up at the end of it as the Vulture and say, hey, maybe it'll work this time. I just hope it has a decent story and it flows into the next phase for the DC movies. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the Oscar-nominated short films and Picard Season 3. We all love the Manscaped personal grooming products, but we all come to a personal quandary when wanting to trim above the equator. Now there's a solution. Manscaped now sells beard products. The Beard Hedger Pro Kit comes with all you'll need to keep your furry face under control, from a trim to a fresh shave. And when you use the code FATGUYS, you get 20% off and free shipping. The Beard Hedger is a cordless trimmer that uses a single rotary blade with 20 hair-cutting lengths. And you know what that means? No keeping track of multiple attachments, dropping them on the floor, and having them fly under the toilet. It's one guard that gives you multiple options. The titanium-coated T-blades cut through the facial hair quickly and smoothly, while Manscaped keeps your face as safe as your privates. The Beard Hedger Pro Kit includes additional accoutrements, like a specialized beard shampoo and conditioner, because your hair on your face isn't the same as the hair on your head, or anywhere else. There's also the Manscaped Beard Oil and Beard Balm, and the kit also includes a beard brush, a specialized beard comb, and scissors to clean up any strays. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use code FATGUYS. Manscaped Beard Hedger. One stroke, one guard, 20 lengths. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Oscar-nominated short films. The Oscar-nominated short films will be presented in multiple programs highlighting 2022's best from around the world in animation, live action, and documentary.
Want to be on TV?
You showed me what true humanity was about.
I've always been a fan of short films. Whenever I go to a film festival, which is admittedly kind of rare, I love to check out their shorts programs. And the part of the reason for that is the shorts programs, they're a great way to sample things. You get to see 10 films in the time it would take to watch maybe one, two, or three movies, depending on what you're watching. And I love animation. I'm a big fan of animation, and they always do these short animated films. And here's the reality. Most of these films, you know, maybe the stuff that Pixar does that gets nominated periodically, maybe those are funded by the corporate size, but a lot of these are just labors of love. A lot of these are real artistry put in there. Shorts TV every year puts the program of the documentary block and the animation block and the live action block. You can go see those in the theaters. And I love highlighting them because it puts a spotlight on stuff most people never get a chance to even look at. Now, I usually don't get a chance to watch a lot of the documentaries, but those are always interesting films. Each one runs about 30 minutes. But certainly, if you're a fan of documentaries, we want to talk about labor of love. Documentaries, first of all, documentaries, unless your name's Michael Moore or Dinesh D'Souza, your documentaries really aren't making much money anyway. So they are a labor of love. And then you go to the short form, nobody's making money on this stuff. Now, when it comes to animation, like I said, I love animation. And this year, the Pixar movie's not in there. There is one that Apple TV runs, which is The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse. And it's a beautiful story done with gorgeous animation. You can find it on Apple TV Plus, but you can also go watch it at the Shorts program. But then there's other ones. There's like this one about the flying sailor, which is about this explosion that happened in this harbor, and it's very surreal. There's one called The Ice Merchants from Portugal in the United Kingdom and France, and it's about these people who make ice and deliver it to this small village. And then the one that's a personal favorite of mine is An Ostrich Told Me the World is Fake, and I Think I Believe It. And this is a stop-motion animated piece. And I love stop motion animation anyways, but it also breaks the fourth wall and it gets very surreal and bizarre. So those are worth checking out. And then in the live action, a lot of the live action stuff tends to be pretty heavy, just like the documentaries. They're just heavy subject matter and they're international. There's one from Luxembourg, which is about a woman coming over who is a purchased bride. There's one called Night Ride from Norway, which is about this woman who essentially steals a train car and has passengers in it, and there's an altercation that happens on it. There's one from Italy called La Pupille, which is I think Disney's behind it, and that's a cute one. There's one called Avalu, which is from Denmark, and it's about this family in upper regions, sort of this native family. And then my favorite for the live action is An Irish Goodbye. It's from Ireland, and it's about these two brothers whose mother dies, and they're trying to fulfill her bucket list after she kicked the bucket. So, I mean, it's these are beautiful movies. These are wonderful to see, and it's a great sampling of talent and world cinema. They're in theaters right now. Check your local listings, or you can go to shorts.tv to find out where they are. But I'm going to have to say the Oscar-nominated short films, as a block, totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Picard Season 3. Admiral Jean-Luc Picard joins forces with Captain William Riker to travel out of Federation space to rescue an old friend.
There is something coming.
Battle stations.
Some kind of attack. And Starfleet could be the target.
There's a darkness. An all-consuming darkness.
And it is getting stronger.
Jean-Luc, trust no one.
Jean-Luc Picard.
We will have vengeance.
Now, look, I know that there are people that hated the first two seasons of Picard. I liked them. I enjoyed them. One of the reasons I liked, especially the first season, is it was Picard completely out of his depth. And I know it wasn't what you expected from it, and there's some silly things that go on, but I loved the fact that Picard wasn't in charge, and he didn't know what he was doing, and he was relying on other people, and he was part of the ragtag group, which is not how he usually was in the original series. But this season, they've really doubled down on the nostalgia. They've got everybody back. I mean, they got the gang back together. They're ready to rock and roll. You got Riker. You got Dr. Crusher. You've got Deanna Troi. You've got Geordi LaForge. You've got Worf. Everybody's back from the original Next Generation. Now, there's a big question about there. Some people who like new Trek versus old Trek, you know, classic, the Gene Roddenberry influence. And we've lost a lot of that as Star Trek has moved more action-y and tried to become more like Star Wars, which partly was started by J.J. Abrams when he did the Star Trek reboot in 2009. He made it more Star Wars-y. He took some of the cerebral elements out of it. And especially when you look at the Discovery, that first season was really, really rocky. I think they've righted their ship a bit and at least are doing some interesting things. But they're making Star Trek more real worldish. I mean, look, you go back to the original Star Trek, like the original series, it's goofy and silly, and some of the, and I'm not even talking politically, I'm just talking about some of the esoteric elements of it are a bit trite now, because I mean, you're talking about stuff that was very forward thinking in the 60s. Some of it's really clunky and it doesn't ring quite well. But look, I mean, I liked the first two seasons of Picard. I really like this one. It's done in the long form. So rather than being episodic, which the original TV series obviously was episodic, you had a couple two-part episodes. But this are following one general arc throughout the season. And Strange New World gets a little bit more episodic, where it's episode to episode seeing what aliens are encountering. Whereas Picard is, there's one thing he's trying to accomplish, and you take a whole season to do it. Now, I've actually had the opportunity to see, I think six episodes of it. So it really moves on, and it takes a little bit of time to get its footing, but you see some of the characters from the past, not just from past seasons of Picard, but some other characters and little Easter eggs from previous Star Trek lore. And I mean, I'm all for it. You know, it leans heavily into the TNG nostalgia, but that's okay. Picard will always be my captain. And I grew up with Captain Kirk. He was never my favorite on the show. I always liked Spock, and I liked Dr. McCoy. Kirk was always secondary. As I've gotten older, I kind of appreciated what they were doing with him. And I actually prefer Kirk as a captain in the movies. But I've always loved Picard, and I like the other characters in Star Trek, but I always felt Picard was a stronger captain. And it's nice to see Patrick Stewart still on board in doing this. So I really enjoyed it. I'm going to say that Picard season 3 totally rocks. Check it out. I can't wait to see how it ends because I haven't seen the whole series. I've seen more than just what drops this week. I mean, this week, I think it dropped on Thursday, and it's going to be dropping a new episode every week. So yeah, Picard season 3 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and Skinamarink. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to be talking about the newest and latest Marvel movie that's out there, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Scott Lang and his family are transported to the Quantum Realm where they face off against a tyrannical villain.
People still need help, Dad.
That's why we made this.
It's like a satellite for deep space, but Quanta.
Wait a minute. You're sending a signal down to the Quantum Realm. Turn it off. Now!
It's a secret universe beneath ours.
What are you so afraid of?
There's something I never told you.
We're starting to see the popularity of the Marvel films fracture just a little bit. I mean, not terribly. I mean, they're still very, very popular. But one of the things that's going on, we are long past the point of just a billionaire in a supersuit. We are in full-blown comic book mode with movies like this, because very much like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, this wastes no time getting into the craziness. The story kicks off with Scott Lang and his family testing out this little device, and they get sucked down to the Quantum Realm, and the entire movie's down there. I mean, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. Kind of like how Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, almost the entire movie took place with them bumping around the multiverse. They did not have a long setup. You don't need setup for these movies. You've had like 27 other movies leading into it. But here's the thing. You can't just make a superhero movie with just an Iron Man guy fighting crime. You've had Thanos come in, and you've had them go to the multiverse, and you've had them with Spider-Man come on with different versions of characters, and you've had the Guardians of the Galaxy with a tree and a talking raccoon. So these are out-the-door, over-the-top concepts, and they're leaning into it, and people are now acclimated to it. Now, here's the thing. This is not going to be for everybody, and I know that there's certain people out there who are like, oh, the Marvel movies, I'm just bored with them. They annoy me. Do I have to watch all the Marvel movies so I can understand this? I just don't have time for that. If you don't want to see the movie, don't see the movie. And this movie's not for everybody. Not everything can be for everybody. No movie is. But one of the things that I see people complaining about a movie like this is the reason they complain about it is because it's not what they exactly wanted. I would have rather seen this happen. Well, shut up. It's a fun, crazy, over-the-top comic book. It's a comic book movie. This is normal stuff for comic books, and I love the fact that they're playing around with it. It's also, because it's an Ant-Man movie, there's some humor to it. And that's good, because Ant-Man, the films, in particular the Ant-Man movies, have really leaned into humor, whereas something like Black Panther tends to be a little more serious. But the Ant-Man stuff always has a little bit of fun. But there's real skin in the game, too, because, you know, he's out there trying to save his family. His family that he missed for however many years because of the blip. I mean, it's a bonker ride, but it's not perfect. The first half of the movie suffers from some writing problems. One of them is because they rush it. It does seem a little bit rushed, but I'd rather have a rushed beginning for a two-hour movie in a franchise that doesn't need to be set up than to spend an extra half hour like they do on the Fast and Furious movies. But the other problem is because it all hinges on the fact that Michelle Pfeiffer's character was down in the Quantum Realm, and she's like, well, there's something I can't tell you about. And they're like, why can't you tell? Oh, it's just too much. I'm like, look, you're in a spaceship or a, you know, subatomic spaceship for 3 hours. You got time to talk. I find that as a trope. It annoys me, but I can forgive it. By the time you get to about the halfway point and they really kind of flesh out who this villain is, played by Jonathan Majors, who does a really good job in it. And you've been teased as to who this person is with some of the TV series like Loki and What If. You get an idea of at least what possibly might be going on behind the scenes. It really kicks off and it goes completely bonkers. It is a bizarre crazy, weird little adventure, but it delivers with what it's supposed to be. And one of the things that does get annoying is, especially there's critics out there. I have no interest in this. I've lost. I'm ready to tap out. I'm done with the Marvel movies. And then they drop a Fast and Furious trailer and they're like, oh, give it to me. Give me all of it. I'm like, these are the same movies. How can you complain about the Marvel movies and then worship the Fast and Furious movies? They're the same kind of thing. They're underwritten, goofy stories about fake people and giant overblown action sequences. You can't, oh, but the Fast and Furious, they use real stunts. Really? Did they really have a Lamborghini chasing a submarine? Did they really shoot a car into space? Did they really jump from one building to the next between two glass structures hundreds of feet from the air? No, they didn't. That was all CGI. Yeah, just look, I have no patience for things where people dump on something and then turn around and then adore something else that's just as dumb and stupid, but still fun. I mean, if one thing's fun, the other thing can be fun. And ultimately, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun watching it. And yeah, a lot of it is set up for the next movie. That's how they do it in Marvel. Ever since Iron Man 2, that was a big beef I had with people with Iron Man 2. They're like, oh, they have these weird moments where they have to go talk about this. I'm like, yeah, because they're setting up the next movie. That's what a series of movies do. Yes, Kang, who's the bad guy, is not just the bad guy in this one. They're setting him up for the entire next phase. You know how I know that? Because his name's in one of the Avengers movies coming up in like 5 years. So, look, if you like Thor, Love, and Thunder, and you like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, you'll probably enjoy this one. I did. There's nothing wrong with the Marvel movies. I know people love to just hate on them. Because it's popular, I am better than the average person because I don't like the average person stuff. But give me all of that Fast and Furious. Just inject it into my eyeballs now. Look, it's a dumb action movie, but it's a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. You know, it suffers from some script problems in the first half, but ultimately it delivers a bonkers but exciting gateway in the next Marvel phase. And I'm down for that. I am all in. So I'm going to say Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Skinamarink. I think that's how you pronounce it. I really don't know. This experimental horror film follows siblings trapped in a surreal deconstruction of reality.
In this house, in this house,
this is available on Shudder. It came out in theaters, and it's come out as a streaming thing. I was going to cover it a couple weeks ago. I just didn't have time. I know a lot of horror fans have been talking about this movie, but it's a challenging film. Every 6 months to a year, you get a horror film that gets buzzed about. The last time this happened was Terrifier 2. Terrifier 2 was that little slasher movie that stood out above everything else. But Skinamarink is a more of an experimental movie. I think it started out as a short film, and it is about these kids in this house, but it's told in a very bizarre way. It's like these VHS cameras around the house, but they're like just set in different places. They deliberately don't capture the action, which is a very experimental film type thing to do. But it can be very frustrating for the audience, especially if you're not ready for that kind of thing. And it is some very creepy moments. You heard from the trailer, there's not much real honest-to-God dialogue that you can understand, but there's noises and stuff, and it's very atmospheric. And it can be very unsettling with some of the things that are said and some of the things that happen. It started out as a short film, I think, and then it got put to a feature, and I think it just drags too much as a feature, because not much happens in the movie, which is kind of the point of the film. It's supposed to be more a movie that exudes emotion and atmosphere rather than a full-blown story. There's a lot of times where it deliberately doesn't show things, and that's, like I said, that's frustrating and confounding. As an experimental film, that's cool. Bringing it to a full feature, good. I mean, it's not for everybody. I respect it more than I enjoyed it. Let's just put it that way. It's intriguing, but often confounding. This experimental short film structure in a feature-length form loses cohesion and interest, so it's not perfect And it's more a curiosity than anything. I'd like to see what the filmmakers would do if they were actually given a story that they had to pay attention and have traditional characters in. You know, as an atmospheric piece, it's good. But I didn't love it. I appreciate it. I respect it. And I'm going to say it kind of rocks, but it's really right there on the fence.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Song of the South and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Avenue 5. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with a vintage review, a very vintage review. And this has been in the news lately, Song of the South. I'm going to go ahead and just play the trailer and then we'll talk about what's going on with it. A boy from Atlanta visits his grandmother on a plantation while his parents are separating and finds support from the kindly Uncle Remus.
Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder.
It's the truth. It's actual. Everything is satisfaction.
Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
Now that's the kind of day when you can't open your mouth without a song jump right out of it.
Zip-a-dee-doo-da, zip-a-dee-ay. My, oh my, what a wonderful day.
This has been in the news lately, mainly because Disney shut down Splash Mountain and they're rebranding it through Princess and the Frog. And a lot of people are upset. Now, Splash Mountain is not Song of the South, but it uses the characters of Song of the South. It has, you know, Br'er Rabbit, Br'er Fox, Br'er Bear, and it plays Zippity-Doo-Dah. And there's a big debate going on. Is this racist? Is this cancel culture? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, you know what? I remember seeing Song of the South like way, way, way back, probably in the 70s or 80s. And as a kid, I remember seeing it as a kid and having no interest at all in the live action stuff. And once the cartoon started, I was really interested. So I was probably about 7, maybe, when I saw the original movie. And I found this on the Internet Archive, which is the public domain server that was put up there for historical reasons. And I know a lot of people say, well, they don't say the N-word. And, you know, it's not about slaves. It takes place after slavery was. Yeah, but here's the thing. Having been able to watch this again in 2023, where this was made almost 80 years ago, there's some difficult stereotypes in it. I mean, it's not overtly offensive with the N-word being screamed, but you've got every black person as a sharecropper, and they're happy and fit that kind of happy working stereotype, coming back and singing and everything, which is not accurate. And the white family is the most important people in the area. Like, when the kid goes missing, everybody outside of the plantation who live in shacks all stop everything and go to help this hugely wealthy family find their kid. Now, granted, there's a white family and it's a bunch of white trash too, and they're the kind of the bad guys of the film. So, I mean, there's this element where they're trying to actually be somewhat sensitive as they make this movie, but it's racially sensitive through the lens of the 1940s. At a time where the black actors in this couldn't actually go see the movie at the premiere in Atlanta because of segregation laws. And yeah, the guy who plays Uncle Remus and Hattie McDaniel are in it. And they spoke very highly of it. They said, no, it's an uplifting film. But here's the thing. Both of them died long before the civil rights movement even started. It's very different to look at it at the lens that they looked at it, where Hattie McDaniel was working on like Gone with the Wind. It'd be different if you ask somebody who's looking at it now. It reminds me of when I watched Birth of a Nation, and Lillian Gish was constantly saying that it was not a racist movie. And you're like, it is such a racist movie. And she never denounced it. And she always spoke highly of it. And part of it was because it was one of her big movies. But you look at that movie now and you're like, this is incredibly, incredibly offensive, the Birth of a Nation. And what I've always learned is if a group of people is going to take issue with something, you got to listen to that group of people as to whether it's offensive. And yeah, you can always find somebody who doesn't agree. But in general, you got to listen to the people who are impacted by it, not the people in the majority. A lot of people are saying, wow, this is just a modern woke culture. Well, no, it's not. I mean, black activists had issue with this movie when it was made. There were a lot of people speaking out against it. So this is not like a new thing. And I think the biggest problem is this is beyond the yellow face moment in the Aristocats. And it's more than the crows in Dumbo, which are problematic stereotypes as well. This is pervasive. And it's not any one thing you can pull out, like they say one thing or they do one line, but just the pervasive imagery you're putting in there. And the reason it's a problem and why Disney, I believe, has decided not to release it in any way, shape, or form is because it was meant to be a family film, and it's kind of hard to watch as a family film because of the pervasive stereotypes that are in there. And I know it's charming. This thing is loaded with Disney charm. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's beautifully animated. It's innovative for what they did with the mixture of live action and animation, but it's got problematic stuff to it. I mean, the songs are beautiful. The songs are great, and they're still classics. And now look, when I was a kid, I wasn't all that interested in the live action scene, but it's actually kind of interesting to watch the stories about the parents separating, which I'm like, first of all, that wasn't really dealt with in the late 1860s. And they really weren't making movies, kids movies, certainly about it in the 1940s, which is very, you know, progressive for lack of a better term. But the live action stuff can be seen as dull and corny, but I wouldn't show this to kids without at least some context. For that matter, I showed my kids 16 Candles, which I love, but they got some really offensive stuff in that you're like, whoa, you can't treat women like that. So it's not just anything. You kind of have to look at this as an adult and as a parent. But the bottom line, is this censorship that it's not out there? No. You know why? It's not the government doing it. It's a private company deciding not to release something. They own the rights to it. They can do whatever they want to it. Disney is under no obligation to put a DVD or Blu-ray or streaming release of Song of the South. If you really want to find, you can find copies of it, either laser discs out there. There's, like I said, on Internet Archive, this guy put up a 35mm digital print of it. You can find clips of it. You can find the entirety of the movie probably through clips on YouTube. But putting it out there on Disney Plus for people to watch, I can see where there's a problematic nature to it. And I understand that. But, you know, as a piece of history, it's very interesting. You know, it's just not something I would be showing kids without a long conversation afterwards. So, I mean, it's full of Disney charms, but it's sadly weighted down with problematic racial stereotypes and tropes. So it serves more as a look at Disney history than the family film it was meant to be. I'm going to still say, as a piece of history, Song of the South does kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on an HBO series that I've stumbled onto. It's called Avenue 5. This HBO comedy follows an interplanetary pleasure cruise that faces one disaster after another.
Bridge crew, listen up. I need a course back to Earth. There's a lot of people counting on us to get them there.
Passengers are angry.
We've got an S-storm brewing, and this a-hole is not helping.
She's my favorite.
Is she?
Because you are head of mission control.
And I guess what they're saying is that you're not in control of the mission.
Bit of an update. The three injured passengers, no longer injured.
At last, bit of good news.
No. They're dead.
Probably should have led with that guy.
First off, this has a great cast. You know, it stars Hugh Laurie as the captain of this vessel. And you've got a lot of people that you'll recognize from comedy shows. Like you've got, well, Josh Gad, he plays the guy who owns it. And there are people you recognize from The Office or other comedy stuff. It's got a great comedic cast. And it sets it up as just a bunch of entitled idiots out there on this intergalactic trip. And then something goes wrong. Now, part of it is they set it up in such a way. They design the characters and the background of the show that this disaster was inevitable. It was going to happen because it's about image versus reality. And there's something that's interesting to say there. The problem is it's meant to be satirical and it works at certain times, but it's this mix of sci-fi and humor and satire. And that sometimes gets in the way because, you know, satire is great with a humor context, but sometimes it's just a little too heavy-handed. I mean, it struggles with its point to be satirical while it's doing broad comedy, but it's also trying to stretch this out so this ship, if it ever returns to Earth, the show's over. So they constantly have to have things going wrong and stupid things happening. And it's not just about in a small society of a group of people in a pleasure cruise, and the class disparity that you see there, but also the look of image versus reality, because like the bridge crew are all actors and the people who actually fly the ship are in steerage essentially. So it gets preachy and judgy at times, and especially for cruises. I love going on cruises. And there are some people who just hate that. And so then they get very judgy about people. They'll go do something else that is just as problematic for wealth disparity. They'll go stay at a resort, which is no different than a cruise. People just rail on cruise industry, and I like cruises, so this thing I go, well, you know, that's not quite fair. But it's funny enough. It's one of these shows that I've been watching. You know, if it's late on a weekend and I've had a couple too many adult beverages, maybe I'll watch an episode or two. And it gets funnier in that context. So if I got my drink package going on, it works. I mean, it's at times clever and at other times judgmental and preachy. It has a great comedic cast that mostly carries the show's overstretched premise. I'm going to say it kind of rocks. It's shaky, but I'll watch the third season when it comes out.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Jesus Revolution and everybody's favorite, Cocaine Bear. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.